Welcome everyone to iloverealestate.tv. Great to have you guys on board. Now today what I'd like to talk about is a topic that's really come about as a result of me travelling around Australia talking to some of my students. Australia has a phenomenon which is sweeping the country, and it's really been sweeping the country for a lot of years now, and I'm talking probably, you know, 20, 30, 40 years perhaps. I guess it really came about post-war when our vets came back from the war, World War II, and land was issued to the vets, and you know, we were really encouraged to rebuild Australia and to have a piece of land that we could call our own and create jobs and all of that kind of stuff, which is all good morale building and good for the country and economics and all of that kind of stuff. But what it did do is it instilled into generations this concept of having not just a home, but really a grand mansion. And it really became something that went over the top, over the edge in the 1980s. Because in the 1980s, it was really the time of excess. You know, even our music, our clothes, our hairdos, for goodness sake, were one of excess. I guess I'm showing my age there a little bit because some of you listening to this may not even have been around in the 80s. But from a property perspective, what it meant was that the bigger and bigger McMansion was the go. And this really continued on until really, I guess, up until this last GFC, we've started to see a shift and a conscious change in the mass consciousness of coming back to something more sensible, something that suits our needs. But it's not so much whether you've got a big house or not. What it's about is what stage of life you have the dream home. Now, what I want to talk about here is trophy properties. Now, whether it be a trophy investment property or whether it be the trophy home that you live in, we all have a tendency to want the trophy property. The thing is, most people want that trophy property far sooner than they should. Now, I've got a bit of a philosophy on this, and it comes back to the cycles of life. Now, some of you may have heard me talk about this before, but when I start, you know, referring to the not so much the cycles of life, but the cycles of investment, what happens is, you know, when you leave school and you get your first paycheck, you're in party mode. You know, it's all about where you're going to spend your money on Saturday night. But eventually, most of us, at least at some time in our lives, step out of party mode and we go into accumulation mode. And in accumulation mode, it's about exactly that, accumulating wealth. Some of us get sidetracked into, the greed and the lure of the quick buck. Some of us throw our money at the stock exchange, and we all know how I feel about that. And some of us, you know, we get into property. And for those of you who do get into property, most people start with their own home, their PPR, their principal place of residence. And a lot of people, when they first move out of home, they want the kind of house that they've lived in all their life. And, you know, they want the same one that mum and dad have got, and that they don't realise that they've actually worked all of their life to be able to afford that size house with all of the bits and pieces attached to it. And in order to gain that outcome, you get into a lot of debt. Where in reality, what we should be doing when we first get out there is, I'm not against buying your own home. Absolutely. And it's a tax-free way to accumulate wealth, and you've got to live somewhere. So, hey, you know, having a PPR is probably not a bad idea. But the type of property you should look for is a property that you can manufacture growth on, because that's really what your first property should do. It should be a property that you can increase equity, that you can do something to it to make it worth more. Now, whether it be a crappy old property that you buy and renovate, whether it be something that you can do a manufactured growth strategy on, like I teach in some of my seminars, or whether it be the type of property that, you've specifically targeted for a high growth area. I think that's probably the laziest strategy to choose and not my preferred one. I'd rather have some degree of certainty in what what profit I'm going to make or what growth I'm going to get out of my property simply by doing something to it. So I control that growth. Now, you might call me a little bit of a control freak, and perhaps you'd be right in that. But obviously, if you're controlling your growth, if in a flat market you can still make money, then you're going to be streets ahead of everybody else. And even if we're talking about an investment property, having the ability to be able to make that property worth more is very, very important. Now, if we're talking about an investment property, I will even take that a step further in that that first investment property needs to be as positively geared as possible. Wow, that might be a big ask for some of you. You know, getting out there and buying something that is least going to look after itself. I mean, why would you go out there and buy something that's going to be negative? Why would you go out there and purposely lose a dollar just to save 30 cents? It doesn't make a lot of sense at all. But that's what people do, and they do it time after time after time until they get to a point where they're so stuck in that investing. You know, every property that you buy that's negatively cash flowed costs you money. It puts you further and further behind the eight ball. Every property you buy that's negatively cash flowed puts you in a worse position when banks look at you. You have less serviceability to go out there and get another property, and you've tied up equity into a deal. And unless you're manufacturing growth on that deal and forcing the value of that property, then you're behind the eight ball from a security perspective as well. So either way, you get bitten. Not the way to go, guys. Definitely not the way to go. When you first step out into accumulation mode, it's exactly that. It's about accumulation. Now, in order to be able to continue to accumulate, what you've got to be doing is being able to, A, get more serviceability. Now, the way you get more serviceability is to buy a property that has more income coming in than it costs you. So after you pay the interest on the mortgage, after you pay the rates, after you pay the management fee, after you pay insurances and you know all the other bits and pieces, repairs and maintenance, whatever other expenses you've got on that property, after all that's paid for, you've still got money left at the end of the week. If you can tell me that a property does that for you, then that's worth taking to the next step. Now, the next step is a property that you can do something to. So you need to be doing a manufactured growth strategy. You need to be doing a strategy on the property that increases the value of that property. And, you know, sometimes you might end up buying a property that the day you buy it, it might not be quite positively cash flowed, but when you do this and this to it, then it will be. Well, that's okay. It might scrape in as a yes for a purchase as well. Now, on top of that, you should be looking at that property as a stepping stone to the next stage. Now, I don't care whether we're talking about your own home. And if you're talking about your own home, then we're looking at a property that maybe you can get extra income from. You know, can we rent the rooms out? Can we get a boarder in for a short space of time? Can we rent to a foreign student? Can we add a granny flat? Can we increase the yield on the property? Can we convert it to a dual occupancy property? Can we go upstairs, downstairs? What can we do to increase the yield on the property, even if you're living there? So even if it's your first house and you're living there, think about what can you do to increase the earn or the return on that property. Second to that, think about what you can do to increase the value of the property. I mean, even if you can't do anything from an income perspective, at the very least, that property should be doing something for you from an equity perspective. It should be making you money more than just sitting there in lazy equity. You know, the last thing we want to have is lazy equity. We want to have that whatever reserves we've got, whatever cash we've got, whatever savings we've been able to put together, whatever we've been able to put into that property, you want it working at its hardest capacity. I mean, if you think about it, if you were an employer and you had a staff member who was lazy, who didn't do their work, who turned up late all the time, who wasn't conscientious, what would you do? You'd sack them. That's exactly what you do. So why let your money be lazy? It's like your employee. It needs to be out there working for you, and it needs to be working hard. You need conscientious, hard-working money. That's what it's about. So in order to do that, it's got to be earning you a passive income, preferably, and it's got to be working hard and producing equity. It's got to be you've got to be doing something to that property to make it worth more, much more than just lazy growth. That's the first thing. And every single property you buy should be a stepping stone to the next stage. So every single property that you buy needs to be putting you in a better position to be able to move forward and do the next deal. If you're not doing that, then what you are doing is you're stalling yourself. I mean, why take 20, 30, 40, 50 years to do something that with smart investing, educated investing, you could probably do in less than 10? Now, doesn't that mean then if you replaced income and you created great wealth reserves, that you're then in a position sooner to be able to get out and do the things that you want? And that might be, volunteering around the world. It might be travel. It might be having kids. It might be whatever. It doesn't really matter what that thing is. That's your call. You know, I can't preempt what that is for you. You're going to know that stuff very well for yourself. You're going to know the things that you want to do in your life. So let's look at the strategies to be able to achieve that and make that stuff happen. So, number one, make your money work hard and be a conscientious employee for you. Make sure that your money is earning you income. Now, you've got to live somewhere. So if we're talking about your own home or your PPR, then at least make it increase in value so that it's gaining more than just dead money on rent. And if it's an investment property, I want it to be at least at a bare minimum neutrally geared, which means it looks after itself, and I want manufactured growth in the strategy as well. The more strategies you pile on top of each other, the more profit you're going to make, the better cash flow you're going to have, and the quicker you're going to get to that end goal of doing whatever it is you want and having all your income replaced and all that kind of stuff. And remember that every single property needs to set you up for the next one. So what's the next thing I can get into? If I do this deal, where does it put me? Am I in a position to be able to move forward and go into the next deal? So that's what you've got to have in the back of your mind every time you're selecting a property to buy. Now, in accumulation mode, it's exactly that. It's about accumulating. You accumulate enough properties so that you've replaced your income. And when I say replaced income, it's replaced your need income. Now, notice I didn't say want. I said it replaced your need income. How much you need to cover your basic needs. How much you need to live. How much you need to get around and survive at a reasonable standard. Now, some of you may be living on salaries, as an example, that are less than where you want them to be. Great, that's okay. Let's just replace your current salary right here, right now, first. Once you've done that, then we'll look at doubling it. Once you've done that, then we'll look at trebling it. And I really feel that you should stay in accumulation mode at least until you've replaced your income 2, 3, 4 times, at least as a bare minimum twice. Now, once you get into the education side of things, and you start to really understand how quickly this can happen and how you can roll these deals out to make that happen in a relatively short space of time, you'll quickly realize that it's not even that hard. It takes work, absolutely, and it takes determination, and it takes consistency, and it takes motivation, and it takes ongoing education, and it takes networking and being around inspirational, like-minded people who are out there doing the same things themselves, so you can feed off each other and all that great stuff, which is all exciting and new. And to be able to do that constantly and get into properties and you can see it happen and you've got a sense of achievement and one property rolls into the next. And as part of your home, it's just a stepping stone. You see, too many people go out there in this accumulation mode. And they do one of two things. They either buy the trophy home. They try and get into that dream home long before they've actually gone out and replaced income 3 or 4 times over. And I don't think you should have it. I don't think you should even be half considering your dream house until such time as you have replaced your income. And you're so secure. You don't need any more properties. You're so secure. You've replaced your income three or four times over. You could stop work and not do anything for the rest of your life. And you go, you know what? This is it. I'm happy. Then you can start thinking about the next stage, which includes your dream home. But see, most people go out and buy the bigger McMansion with the bigger and bigger and bigger mortgage, and their expenses outweigh their income. And this is where bankruptcies happen. This is where things get into trouble. This is where you end up in a situation where, you know, it's not good, and things can get very dire very quickly. So you need to take control of that. Don't even think about the dream home. Think about having a home that's over your head but is working for you. It's just another cog in the wheel. It's just another tool in your arsenal of assets to wealth build. It's another asset on the balance sheet, nothing more. So, and the other thing they do, not necessarily with their own home, but the other thing that people do is they buy trophy investment properties. This is absolutely ridiculous. You know, people go out and they buy a property because, oh, they had some spare time and it was on a holiday, and they walk past a real estate agent, oh, it'd be lovely to have a holiday house here, honey. Let's buy a place here. And negative cash flow, probably oversold. The marketeers in the middle are probably making 40, 50 grand out of you to start with. And as soon as the developers have walked out of that estate, the thing drops in value 40 to 50 grand. Or, you know, you get talked into a house and land package where exactly the same thing happens. You buy in stage 12 of a 14-stage estate. Oh, but look at the growth that this has had. Yeah, had. It's not going to have that in the future if you're at the end of the estate. And even your standard house and land packages, most of them are just so oversold. They're your standard four-bedroom, two-bathroom house in the burbs, exactly the same as everybody's house in the entire estate. Negative cash flow in new estates that the marketeers make 40 to 50 grand out of you in the middle. And, you know, you, as soon as the marketeers move on to the sell the next biggest, best thing in the century, your place drops in value. And it might take you 3 or 4 or 5 years to even recoup what you paid for it. Ridiculous. That's not what you should be doing at all. What you should be doing is buying investment properties that make sense. You shouldn't be saying, what do I want? What you should be saying is, what does my portfolio need next? Now, that is a very important question you should ask yourself. What does my portfolio need next? Here's the drum. If you are low in equity, so you've got minimal amount to go into a deal, guess what? Your probable next deal needs to be a deal that you can manufacture equity on. It needs to be a deal that puts you in a better position to be able to move forward. It needs to be a deal that you can force the value of. It needs to be, at the end of the deal, worth more and be able to be revalued, and you get back not only what you've put into the deal, but more than that. So you need to be gaining ground with the strategy. If you're in a position where you've got asset rich and you're as poor as a church mouse from a cash perspective, as many of the old school investors are, who, you know, have been around for a little while and they've conscientiously paid off their home and whatever, and they might have a farm or something like that, and you end up with asset rich and cash poor, guess what? Your next investment should be a cash deal. It should be one where you maximize the yield and you increase your cash position. So in both of those scenarios, you have strengthened your weakness. You have put yourself in a better position to be able to move forward into the next deal. And that's what accumulation mode's all about. It's about accumulating as many properties as you need to have your income position replaced 3 or 4 times. All right, let's say we've done that. Let's say with some help and some education and like-minded people and all the stuff that I went through before, you've now achieved that. Now what? Well, now we step out of accumulation. Now, remember, we started in party. We went across to accumulation. Now we're stepping out of accumulation and we're getting into consolidation. And up until this point in time, our PPR is just a stepping stone to the next deal. It is a cog in the wheel. It is one of your investments. It is a means to an end. Now that you've replaced your income three or four times, now we will step out of that and we'll go into consolidation. Now, in consolidation, it's about a number of things. First of all, it's about reorganizing your existing portfolio so it does what you need it to do. It's about putting into place the properties that you want to die with. That's a big task, isn't it? You know, it's not the American way of doing things. Americans tend to think of properties as tools that you flip so that you've got more money to go and throw into the share market. Well, that's not what we do here. We want to die with these properties. We want to have them set up in trust structures so that we can pass them on as a legacy for generations to come and can comfortably support us for, you know, as long as we end up here on this plane this time round. So, consolidation is about maybe selling some of your properties and replacing them with others, maybe selling some of the properties, taking the equity out of them, paying taxes. Oh my goodness, I said pay tax. Taxes should be something you relish. You should have, go, wow, I paid so much tax this year, it was so cool. Some of you are going, is she on drugs or what? No, I'm not on drugs. See, the thing is, if you're paying taxes, you're making money. If you're not paying taxes, you're not making any money. So what are you doing? Why aren't your investments making you money? So you should think about taxes being, you know what? I want to pay $1 million tax a year. Woohoo! $1 million. How much money do you reckon you're making if you were paying $1 million in tax? How would you feel about paying $1 million in tax? You should be hanging off the chandeliers. You should be jumping for joy. Because if you're paying $1 million in tax, I can tell you what, your earnings for the year haven't been too bad at all. So think of taxes as something, as a good thing, because, you know, somebody's got to pay for the roads and the hospitals and the healthcare system and whatever else. Admittedly, I'll teach you how you can minimize the amount of tax that you absolutely have to pay, but you want to be paying taxes, because if you're not paying taxes, you're not making any money. So if you did sell off some of your portfolio, pay the taxes and use that extra equity there to pay down debt, to reorganize some of the properties. Maybe you've got too many properties at this stage. Maybe you need to bring them down so that you've got less debt, less properties, less debt. Some of you go, you know what? No, I don't want to do that. I want to keep all of these properties. But what I want to do is I want to have a chunk machine. Now, everybody wants a chunk machine. A chunk machine is basically a pool of money that you set aside to do manufactured growth strategies. And whether it be anything from subdivisions, estratas, to developing, to whatever, construction, building, what you're doing is you are making that money turn over and produce chunks of cash through selling the properties, paying taxes, and what's left over after tax-paid money, you use that to pay down debt on the remaining portfolio. So consolidation is about debt reduction. It is about reducing debt to zero. Now, in party mode, well, we really didn't care. In accumulation mode, the debt levels were probably still fairly high, but the income was high enough that it not only paid interest on 100% of all of the mortgages, but it put enough income back in your pockets to replace your income three or four times. Once we get into consolidation, the name of the game is debt reduction. And getting your portfolio debt-free. Now, you can do that by strategically selling off a few and paying down debt. You can do it through strategically buying properties where you can turn them over. So you're buying properties specifically for sale purposes to generate a chunk of money through manufactured growth. Take that money, pay tax, and pay down the debt on your existing portfolio. Now, it's only in this stage that I would consider you can have a trophy. Now, that might be your PPR trophy and a trophy investment property that's just a throwaway. It's the place on the beach. It's the place in the bush. It's the whatever. It's in consolidation that you can start to use that chunk machine process to get the toys. You know, life is about having some toys as well. And, you know, in this consolidation mode, it's about reduce debt so you're debt-free and get the toys. Have the dream house. Have the car you want. Have the travel. Have the whatever. And you stay in consolidation until you've got all the income you're ever going to need for the rest of your life. You've got a debt-free portfolio. And then it's like, well, now what do I do? I've paid off all my debt. Where do I go to now? What do I make happen? And that's where you step out of that accumulation mode and you step into party mode again. And party mode over here is a much better place. Party mode over on the other side of accumulation and consolidation, that's about giving back. It's about making a difference. It's about doing all the things that you know you've always wanted to do, whether it be volunteer in Cambodia or whether it be build a hospital in Peru, you know, whatever, because you can. It's about making a difference in someone else's life. Some people who have big hearts, and that's wonderful, try and do it upside down. And they give all their money away up front and, they spend all their time helping others, which is great. But the thing is, when you don't look after yourself first, you can't help somebody else as much as you can when you look after yourself first. Get yourself in a stable position to be able to go and help another person. I mean, even the airlines tell you to put your own mask on first before you even help children. So if they're telling you to do that, do the same thing in property, because then you're able to make a much bigger difference at a much greater level for a lot more people. So they're the cycles of life. And I really want to warn you against having that trophy too soon. I remember talking, this is actually about 6 months ago now, to one of my students who I looked at their portfolio and said, you've got all trophies. Now, admittedly, they had good income to be able to afford the trophies, but it's like, this is not setting you up for the future. This is setting you up to have to continue to work for the rest of your life to be able to afford all of these trophies. They needed to sell the trophies, and some of them were going to be sold at a loss in order to be able to redivert those assets, redivert that capital that was tied up in these trophies into properties that were going to serve them. You know, so we're working so hard, you know, I want time with my family, I want time to be able to travel and do all these things. I said, great, get rid of the trophies, because that's what's stopping you. These trophies were stopping them from being able to continue to invest. It was stopping them from being able to go and buy decent properties that actually did something for them. You know, what they had was lazy workers. They were the employer with unconscientious workers for them, and all of those properties were unconscientious workers. So you've got to whip those employees, whip those houses to make them work harder for you. Make sure those assets are really working to their biggest, best potential. And that's how you're going to get ahead. That's how you're going to have income replacement. That's how you're going to have time to be able to do all the things that you want to do. That's how you're going to have time to be able and money to be able to help somebody else. So that was my message for today. I really wanted to hammer that one home very, very strongly, that trophies don't serve you. It's good to have rewards when you have an achievement, but the reward has to be appropriate for the achievement. And, you know, if you get out there and make 50, 80, 100 grand on a property, take 5, take 10, and have a joy. I was talking to somebody today about the fact, I said, okay, step yourself forward with where we are 3 years down the track. Tell me what your life looks like. And you know, they was, oh, I want this, and I want a property on the Sunshine Coast as well as one in Melbourne, and, you know, so we're, and I said, what do you want the property on the Sunshine Coast for? Oh, well, I want to go up there and you know, have a holiday every year. I said, it is cheaper to go and pay for a holiday every year for a month if you choose to than it is to service a negative cash flow property for the next few years. And when I showed them the sums, it was like, aha, maybe you're right. They were much better to put that equity, those dollars, into something that was going to produce the 10, 20, 30, 40 grand a year passive income so they could go anywhere they wanted. And that's how you have to think. You have to think, okay, what does my life look like? What do I want it to be? How much money do I need to make that happen? You know, where do I want to go? How much do I want to travel? How much do I need to pay for the kids' education or the university or the whatever? What do I have to do that stuff? How much money do I need? And then, all right, so what positive cash flow properties do I need to produce that income to have that experience for the rest of my life? It's a much better way to look at it than the trophy house, the trophy house, the trophy house. Yet it is something that I see young people particularly fall into over and over again. Just this afternoon, I had a lady sitting here talking to me, one of my students, and she got a little bit teary about her sister. Now, her sister was somebody who did the traditional thing, you know. They got jobs. They were both had to work to be able to support their lifestyle, and they needed to continue that work just to be able to live. And I said to them, well, how much is their mortgage? I said, oh, well, I think they've done something really silly. I said, what is that? And the really silly part was that they went out and bought the McMansion. They went out and bought the, you know, the big trophy house with the big trophy mortgage. And that one decision set the sister miles apart from my student. And, you know, she was quite upset that she didn't want to leave her sister behind, and she wanted to see, you know, her sister do well and have passive income, because my student sitting with me today had already replaced $100,000 worth of passive income. And she'd done that by being smart about the investment. Yep, she still lived in, a modest house. And even to her, I said to her, listen, I want you to sell that house and buy something that you can actually make more money from. Now, she was not, obviously there's personal choices in there. I'm not saying sell everybody's house. But to her, she wanted to get ahead, and she wanted to get ahead fast. I said, well, one of the things that you can do is sell your own PPR and make money out of where you live. You got to live somewhere, so let's make money out of it. Let's buy something that you can have a great manufactured growth strategy on. And I showed her a little process where she could actually the figures we were playing with, and they're only budgets, but this is likely to be what it'll be over the next 12 months. Will probably make her a couple of hundred grand. That there's no way she would have that extra 200 grand by staying at home, looking after the kids, and, you know, living in the house that they're living in now. So by being prepared to step up and give things a go and to look at different styles of property, very different styles of property from that of a sister, she'll be streets and streets ahead. And she's already proved that over the last 12 months, going from being in very similar circumstances to her sister to being $100,000 passive income and in a position to be able to rebound into the next deal. So, you know, that's what you got to be doing. And it comes through education. I'm sorry, there's no shortcuts. That's what it means. It means investing in yourself first. It means investing in what's between your ears, in attitude, in thought process, in skill, in strategy, in talent, to be able to make that happen. And when you get that, your whole world changes, and it changes very, very quickly. For the student that I was just talking about, she was quite teary about her sister. I was saying, what can I do? And I said, oh, you've got to get her along to start changing her mindset. I mean, get her along when I come to Melbourne next, you know, bring her along when I'm doing a one-dayer and just see how she feels. See if she wants that kind of life for herself. And so that's what she's committed to do, and support her sister through the process, because she doesn't want to see her sister, you know, relying on the pension when... Right here, right now, in 12 months' time, she could be in the same position as my student is now with $100,000 worth of passive income, because that's all this student took to do that. You know, it took 12 months. 12 months of investing and $100,000 passive income, and that's great. So it could be you. Is that what you want? Is that what you choose for yourself? Is that what you choose for your children, for your family, for your everybody around you? See, this is the thing. Once you go on this journey, once you start to go and replace income and have the capacity to be able to do more, to know more, to help more people, everybody around you changes. You can help so many people, and they can't help but change because you're different, your energy's different, everything's different. So you really need to keep that in mind and ask yourself, is that for you? Is that what you want? Do you want your income replaced 3-4 times over? Do you want to be debt-free in consolidation? You know, do you want to be out there making a difference in the world, back in party mode at the, you know, the other end of the scale? Because that's where we change nations. That's where we change economies. That's where everything changes. So, guys, I put it to you. We're coming up to Christmas. We're coming up to a time when it's think time, when it's contemplation time, when we start to set goals and New Year's resolutions and all of that kind of stuff. It's time for you to think long and hard about what you want to do next year, what you want to make happen, you know, and how you want your life to pan out. Ask yourself the question that I asked my student today. What's your life going to be like in 3 years' time? We're 3 years down the track. What does it look like? Describe it to me. What do you do for your day? What do you do when you get up in the morning? How do you spend your day? How do you earn your income? You know, are you still working? Are you not? What kind of house do you live in? Where do you live? What kind of car do you drive? What kind of mates have you got? What do? You can't just sit at home and do nothing. You know, that's silly. People tell me, oh, I want to retire. That's a load of rubbish. As soon as you retire, you're done. It's a matter of how you choose to spend your time, and it's a different kind of productive. It's a different kind of energy. It's a different kind of motivation. It's a different kind of stimulus to make you get up and do stuff. Anyway, I better get off my soapbox. I'm not talking about what I came here to talk to you about, which was trophy properties. No more. You can't afford a trophy until you've at least got to consolidation stage. So, guys, that's it for me. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast today. And ask yourself those questions, like I said. Ask yourself, where is it for you? What do you want? And put yourself 3 years down the track and describe your life. Even write it down. You know, writing down is a great thing to do. There is so much power between the pen and the paper and the mind and how it all connects and how, you know, energy flows and all of that kind of stuff, which I'm not going to get into today. But I promise you over the Christmas New Year break, I will do a special podcast for you just on designing your life, I think is the best way to describe it, designing your life. So stay tuned for that one. I won't promise it'll be next, but I'll certainly do it for you very soon. So bye for now, guys. I hope you're enjoying the I Love Real Estate series. Remember to jump on the website, www.iloverealestate.tv, and you can download me off iTunes. I believe the iTunes have been very, very popular, and we're up there in the stakes, so that's great, and I'm glad so many people absolutely love what the podcast that I'm putting out there. And send me in a message. Let me know what you'd like me to talk about. Let me know, you know, some of the things I can help you with. So, guys, that's it for me today, and I'll talk to you again very, very soon on another exciting topic. So bye for now. Catch you on the website, www.iloverealestate.tv, and I hope to see you at one of my events very, very soon so you can make this kind of stuff happen for yourself. Bye for now.